Christ. Text number 51. Results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead. Responsively, please repeat. By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries. That's Hawaii. No, it's by going back to Godhead. Not Hawaii. Once Prabhupada said, he was in Hawaii, and he said, it's not possible to be happy in this material world. There are so many miseries. It is not possible. He said, but maybe it's possible in Hawaii. They have very nice weather there. Sandy beaches with no little, you know, animals with spikes on them that poison your feet, and like they do in Pula. And, you know, it's very, very beautiful. The trees are just, fruits are growing everywhere in the forest. You don't even have to go to the store. You just walk into any forest and pick some mangoes or some pineapples or all kinds of tropical delicious fruits, and it's a kind of paradise for fools, but it is a paradise. Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse: the liberated living entities belong to that place where there are no material miseries. The Bhagavatam says, Sangha sritaye padapalava plavam mahat padam punyasho murare bhavam buddhirvatsa padam param padam 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 yad vipadam natesham. For one who has accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Mukunda, or the giver of mukti, liberation, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoof print. Param padam, or the place where there are no material miseries, or Vaikuntha, is his goal, not the place where there is danger in every step of life. Owing to ignorance, one does not know that this material world is a miserable place, where there are dangers at every step. Out of ignorance only, less intelligent persons try to adjust to the situation by fruitive activities, thinking that the resultant actions will make them happy. They do not know that no kind of material body anywhere within the universe can give life without miseries. The miseries of life, namely birth, death, old age, and diseases, are present everywhere within the material world. But one who understands his real constitutional position as the eternal servitor of the Lord, and thus knows the position of the personality of Godhead, engages himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, Consequently, he becomes qualified to enter into the Vaikuntha planets, where there is neither material, miserable life, nor the influence of time and death. To know one's constitutional position means to know also the sublime position of the Lord. One who wrongly thinks that the living entity's position and the Lord's position are on the same level is to be understood to be in darkness and therefore unable to engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord. He becomes a Lord himself and thus paves the way for the repetition of birth and death. But one who, understanding that his position is to serve, transfers himself to the service of the Lord and at once becomes eligible for Vaikuntha Loka. Service for the cause of the Lord is called Karma Yoga or Buddhi Yoga, or in plain words, devotional service to the Lord. Karma jam buddhi yukta hi phalam tyaktva manishinaha janma bandhava nirmukta padam gachanti anamayam. By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead. So we have said many times during our visit that we must understand what our goal in this human form of life is. In order to make progress in anything, you have to first analyze what is your goal. As we said in Pula seminar, if you are failing to plan in your life, if you haven't made a plan, if you're failing to plan, then you're actually planning inadvertently or indirectly, you're planning to fail. Nobody can succeed in life without making some kind of a plan and setting a goal, a direction, and a destination where he wants to go. So, in mathematics, how many of you, all of you have taken mathematics in school, correct? You know what is extrapolation? You don't. 50% of your life is wasted. Extrapolation means when you draw a graph, two coordinates, the vertical and the horizontal coordinate, and you plot different numbers. This might be time, and this might be space. So a rocket ship over this much time will cover this much space, and you put points. You know, after 5 minutes time, it will go this far in space. You put a dot there. After 10 minutes time, it'll go this far. And, you know, here's your, if you can just imagine, here's a graph. Okay. Okay. And, you know, it's like this, and then there's a line coming up there. You know what a graph is, don't you? Okay. So by plotting the graph, you get to a certain point where you may not have any more data. But extrapolation means there's a curve there, a pattern. And you can understand, okay, I only have data up to here, but by the gradual development of the curve, I know that when you get to here, this much time, it will have gone this much in space because it just follows the line. If nothing happens to, you know, blow the spaceship up or something, this is what will happen. That's called extrapolation. So in terms of where we want to go with our lives, we all know what the taste of sense gratification is like. There are different varieties of sense gratification. There, for example, are different kinds of food. There's Croatian food, and there's Italian food. There's French food, and there's German food, and there's dog food. Some people like dog food. Dogs do. So there's different varieties of things, and after you've tasted different varieties, you can understand maybe there's some variety somewhere of food that you haven't tasted yet, but more or less the food that you've eaten so far doesn't put you into transcendental ecstasy and put you in a place where there are no miseries. You can figure that out. And in the same way, there's so many different kinds of sense gratification. There's intoxication. If you were born previous to 1960, you know, you probably liked gin and tonic or beer. You know, if you're after 1960, it might have been LSD as your favorite intoxication. If you're from the 80s and 90s, you know, you're a cocaine freak, or heroin, or whatever it is. And there's different varieties of everything. Sense gratification, there's sex life, you know. Nowadays, the most gross animal type of gratification is becoming popular. And the ethic is, in our modern world, that if it feels good, do it. That's the only real ethic. You're entitled, as a human being, supposedly, to do whatever you think feels good. No matter the fact that you're blowing poisonous smoke in everybody's face, but if you like smoking cigarettes, you have a right to do it. And so many other things that people do without considering others. So, after some time in your life of experiencing and experimenting with different varieties of intoxication and illicit sex and this and that, you can draw a graph, a pleasure graph. And you can, if you figure that just by having more of the same, I'm going to become happy, then you really must be foolish, because at the present moment we're not satisfied. And if we think, this is what Mr. Einstein said was one kind of madness. He said, one kind of madness is to think that if we continue doing things in the same way we have always done them, that in the future we're going to get different results. That is madness. You're going to get the same results. So whatever taste you're getting from intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, or any other kind of sense gratification, you're not going to get anything better than that. And no doubt, we are not arguing the point that there isn't some pleasure in those things. There is. But it is like the pleasure of having sweet rice pudding mixed with sand. There is pleasure in sweet rice pudding, but when it's mixed with sand, every time you try to enjoy it, crunch, 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 you bite the sand. You break your teeth. You enjoy the taste of the sweet rice, but you get a follow-up dentist bill. There is a book out now by one businessman. It's called The 100th Monkey. Now, this is a little subtle, so I'll try to explain it. But have you heard of this book? No, I haven't heard of this book. I tried to buy it, and it's still on the market. You can't get it. It's a hot book. But anyway, it's about business, but it's trying to show what it takes to get an organization to change. There's a kind of, what do they call it, a point where, you know, so many people in the organization get a new idea, and by about the 100th person, it might be the 75th, or it might be the 125th, or whatever, just using that number as an arbitrary number, when so many people in the organization take to the new idea, that creates enough momentum that everybody changes. So this book was done, the result of a study, or based on a study of a kind of monkey in Japan. The reason I thought about it was because I just gave the example of sweet rice and sand. This particular monkey liked to eat sweet potato. Very famous, cute monkey and all that. But it had this particular habit of, like, it didn't like bananas. It liked sweet potatoes. You know, most monkeys, you know, they'll settle for bananas. But, you know, if you want to feed this monkey. So the people who were providing this sweet potato to these monkeys, they got the sweet potato from a sandy area of Japan. So when they would serve this sweet potato to the monkeys mixed with the sand, now sand is not particularly good for monkeys' digestion or teeth. But the monkeys were so, you know, intent on getting the sweet potato, and they could not learn the behavior of washing the sweet potato off, so they just put up with it. They ate the sweet potato, and they also grinded their teeth down, and it ruined their teeth. Now, about 1952 or 53, there was one particularly smart female monkey. Not male, female. Who got the idea of washing the sweet potato. And she trained herself to wash the sweet potato, wash the sand off. So, this gives us a lesson that ladies should be in the kitchen washing the vegetables. No. No, that's not. The lesson was that it took around 100 monkeys or so to actually learn. After this female monkey learned the trick, she taught it to others. And they were slow to take it up, the older ones, but the younger ones could pick it up. There's a saying that you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Old dogs like to do the tricks they were trained to do. And you try to introduce a new trick, and, you know, they're not comfortable with it. Well, you know, things are going just fine with our old tricks. We get our dog bones, we get our dog food, you know, why should we do new tricks? But the young monkeys picked it up, and after about 100 monkeys or so, the whole tribe of monkeys changed their habits. So, somehow or other, people can't come to that level of understanding that there's no real happiness in this material world. They've just settled on eating the sweet rice mixed with sand. And They have no concept of a divine life, a soulful life, where there are none of the inebrieties of this material world. The happiness which we get here in the material world, another metaphor, another example will serve. In the Middle Ages, in Europe, there was a particular torture given to prisoners where they would take a prisoner and put him on a specially designed chair, like a palanquin. Everybody knows what a palanquin is? Huh? It's a chair with handles on it and you carry people. Okay. This was like a palanquin, and it was known as the dunking seat. Not dunking donuts, but you have dunking donuts? And no, you don't have that in Croatia. Anyway, it's like McDonald's. It's all over the world. But anyway, this is called the dunking seat. And dunking, in case you don't know, means to take something and push it down. Like, for example, they would take the person sitting in the dunking seat, all tied up, and they push him down under the water. And just before he was about to swallow water and drown, you know, he's ready to gasp for air. His lungs were bursting. Then they'd pull him up. Just when he was enjoying ecstasy, push him down again. And that was the torture, the dunking torture. So we suffer a corrupt government, increasing taxes, irate neighbors, internal family problems. But, you know, we get a little bit of, you know, a few beers at night. And then again, back to work. 5 days a week, tyaga, or renunciation, and 2 days on the weekend, bhoga. Bhoga and tyaga. Renunciation, hard work, anxiety for 5 days, and then 2 days, rush to the shore, the Adriatic Sea. Spend, 10 hours in traffic, and, you know, kids jumping all over the car complaining they want to get out and go to the bathroom or something, or throwing things at each other. And somehow there we get to the beach and it's packed with thousands of people who are trying to do the same thing we are, but we finally find a little corner where we can put our blanket and then rush into the water for 10 minutes, and then it's, you know, we have a bite to eat and it's time to go home again, and then back to work on Monday. And people go through that and they never wonder, is there anything more meaningful in life than this? Is this it? A few good times? A few bad times? And then death? Is that it? So, therefore, Prabhupada says here in the purport, out of ignorance, it doesn't take a whole lot of thinking to figure that there must be something better. But the problem is that unless there is someone there to help us know of something superior, people do get frustrated. Because where do you go? Maybe there's something better. Okay, I'll go to England. They have better beaches there, I'll go to America. We don't know even where to start looking. And the most interesting thing is that the whole way in which we are looking is wrong. We're looking outside to the material world, which we can't control anyway, even if we tried to. The material world is moving under the direction of material energy, of the modes of nature. We explained this yesterday. Sarva Prakriti Jaya Gunai, the modes of material nature. And we can't change anything. We can sweat and toil and labor and plan, scheme, maneuver, manipulate, do so many things. But in the end, nothing changes. Therefore, we should try to change those things that we can change. In other words, our internal situation, our spiritual condition in relationship to the material world. Krishna says, Nistraigunya Bhavarjun Vishaya Veda Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjun Nirdvandva Nitya Sattvasto Nir Yoga Kshema Atmavan. Even the Vedas, most of them deal with the modes of nature. Different formulas how to be happy in the material world, but that's not the secret. Krishna says no matter what you do in the material world, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, dosha, anudarshanam, birth, death, old age, and disease, these are the concomitant miseries of this world. No matter how you try to decorate them, old age, you have department stores here in Croatia, big department stores, huh? Where you can buy everything and anything, and there's many floors and everything. Big, they spend millions of Deutschmarks and, what do you call, kuna? Hundreds of millions of kuna on these department stores. And thousands of people visit there every day, all going to buy things. You know, it's air conditioned. There's piped in music. And, you know, you get all like intoxicated in there. Just walking in there, you immediately want to pull out your money and buy something. You feel embarrassed to walk out without buying something because, you know, the atmosphere just completely grabs you. All psychology. They know. They know exactly how to design the ads to attract your mind. Red color for this and blue color for this and a half-naked woman behind this. And, you know, you just, you can't, you're a puppet on a string. You get sucked in. So, every little square inch of that department store is valuable space. You know, if you wanted to set up a book stall there and sell Prabhupada's books, it would cost a lot of money to buy even a little table because they're doing a lot of sales there. Now, what do you think at the ground level where people just walk in the store? That's probably the most valuable space. It's the first thing people are hit with when they walk into the department store. Now, in most department stores around the world that I've seen, what is the first thing that you greet? What's the first thing that they sell in these department stores? The most valuable space in the store, what are they selling there? Who knows? Ladies, can you help? Cosmetics, right? Cosmetico. Yeah. It's right, right? Yeah. Everybody wants to avoid old age. It's the most important thing. So, there they're selling all kinds of creams and powders and enhancing skin drugs and this and that just to help you pretend you're not getting old. Because it's such a big fear. It's a misery. People reach about, I'll tell you, people go through crises, heavy crises at 45, or 40, even some younger. They call it midlife crises. People, you know, they can't, you know, slam dunk a basketball anymore. You know what slam dunking is? Huh? He does. Slam dunk is where the guy jumps up with the ball and he doesn't throw it in the net. He puts his hand over the hoop and pushes it down through. You know, Michael Jordan and a few others do that, you know. Charles Rodman. Anyway, all the Chicago Bulls can do it. Because they're all bulls, right? Or they will be in their next lives. Anyway, people do the most wonderful things to waste their valuable time. Human life is so important. Slam dunk basketballs. They have nothing better to do. They won't read the Bible. They won't read the Bhagavad Gita. They won't sit together with a group of other devotees and discuss philosophy and have a good time chanting. And they won't do that. They just waste their time, you know, hitting a little ball around a green field into a hole. I mean, that's really going to bring them perfection in the human form of life. So, what were we talking about? Old age. Avoiding old age, right? It's a misery. And disease. It doesn't matter what you do, whether you die in the biggest expensive hospital or you die on the side of the road. Death is death, and it's painful. You can pump yourself full of drugs till you're unconscious or whatever, but death is fearful. Everybody is. There's like 8 kinds of major fear that the human being goes through. And the most intense kind of fear is that constant subliminal or very much out front. It's either in the back of your mind or the front of your mind. But it's the strongest thing, death. They say, there's a saying in English, from the First World War. In the First World War, they had trenches. They dug deep trenches where the soldiers would, you know, move in the trenches. And there were long lines of trenches. The Germans would be here and the French would be here, you know, big long lines, and they'd, you know, shoot at each other from the trenches. So they're called foxholes. Foxholes. So there was a saying, there are no atheists in the foxholes. In other words, when you actually have to face death, there's so much fear there. Where am I going? Is this it? You know, like for example, you know, this man has a nice watch on. Now, if I were to just go and steal his watch, you know, he would immediately object. Maybe he wouldn't because he's trying to take initiation from me, but so. Okay. This guy here, he's got a nice watch. If I tried to steal his watch, he still might object. You never can tell these days. Guru Dakshin is getting smaller and smaller, believe me. If I tried to steal his watch, he would freak out. You know, he would really, no, you can't have my watch. My mother gave it to me, you know. It's been in our family for 10 generations. You can't, you know, you can't have my watch. You know, someone tries to steal your car. You know, I see all the cars now. All over Croatia, Slovenia, everywhere. They have on the dashboard these little blinking lights, right? There's no alarm there, but it's just fake, you know, pretend alarm. I think all the thieves have figured it out by now, but anyway, the point is people are afraid of losing their cars. They don't want to lose their cars. If someone came in and announced, you know, car PLX35, someone's stealing it, you know, the owner would immediately run up and try to, you know, get it. But just imagine at the time of death, you not only lose your watch, you not only lose your car, you lose your leg, you lose your arm, you lose your whole body. You lose everything that you've ever enjoyed life with. That's a very difficult time. It's traumatic. The fear is so intense at that time. So it's painful, death. Death is painful. And old age is painful. And disease is painful. And then rebirth is painful. Birth itself and rebirth is painful for the mother and is painful for the child. The child comes out of the womb unconscious. It's such a pain to be forced through a small opening in the uterus. Wow. Child just goes unconscious. The doctor has to slap him to, you know, wake him up, and then immediately starts screaming because he just went through a trauma. Birth is painful. You're in the womb for 9 months. Now, you know, some of you are having trouble sitting like yogis for 10, 15 minutes. But imagine yourself, you know, wrapped up in a ball for 9 months. And that, too, surrounded by worms biting you and foul substances within the, you know, genital area of the woman. And apart from that, you know, what if she's a drinker and, you know, smoker and this and that, and she's ingesting so many things in her body, and, you know, and you have, you know, pungent, spicy food, and the child is really in a painful situation for 9 months. And that's, you know, that's birth. And it would be just fine if we only had to undergo it once, but according to the Bhagavad Gita, if you don't complete your service to God in this lifetime, then you'll have to come back and undergo the same cycle of birth, death, old age, and disease again. So those who are intelligent, and this is throughout history, this is in every culture, in every country in the world, the intelligent men, they may not have been first class intelligent, but even those with a little intelligent, philosophers, have understood there is a greater meaning to life than the animal pursuits of just settling into eating and sleeping and mating and defending. If you're doing those four things only and thinking that that's life, it's only animal life. You're simply a sophisticated cat or dog. That you're above the cats and dogs because you're a little more sophisticated, that's all. You're a royal addition to the animal kingdom. If all you're doing, you have no transcendent purpose. You've been given the power. Animals have not been given the ability to know God in their lives. They don't have the consciousness. A human being can have an experience and then stand back from that experience and analyze it. Was it a good thing? Was it a bad thing? He can analyze and grade and go forward and plan to do something better. He can discriminate. Specifically, human life is valuable because we have the power to discriminate. But if we give up that power, if we don't utilize that potential, or we utilize it simply to discriminate in the matter of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then we're no better than animals. So there are people in every culture that see this. They're philosophers, they're scholars, they're religionists. And they endeavor for something higher. And according to the facilities they have, they may achieve. But here it is very clearly said that the highest goal that one can achieve, the highest goal that one can endeavor for, is to get out of the physical, material world and go back to the spiritual kingdom of God, where there is only spirit. Nature, material nature, has qualities. Material nature is temporary. Everything about it is temporary. Jatas yahi dhruvo mrityur dhruvam janmam rityasyacha. That which has a beginning has an end. That which is born must die. When you were born, how many of you were born in a hospital? Okay. How many of you got a birth certificate? When you were born, did they give you a certificate of birth, the time and date of birth? Huh? You all got birth certificate. Okay. At the same time, they can give you a death certificate. Just leave the date blank, that's all. Because for one who is born, death is certain. There's no possibility. Something that has a beginning, it has an end. It's been the history of humanity since time immemorial, and it's not going to change. Even the big scientists who are claiming that they will very soon make life in this body eternal, one just died yesterday. Too late for him. It's all simply bluffing. Post-dated check. They can't do it, and they won't do it, and they're cheating themselves and you. So therefore, if you have to get out of this material world anyway, just like if I get some apartment, eventually the rent is going to come up. I'm going to have to pay the rent. And at a certain point, the landlord may even say that, sir, I need this apartment for someone else. You have to get out. And then you have to leave that apartment, or anything can happen, but you're never secure in a rented apartment. And we're not secure in this body. At any moment, we can be kicked out. Therefore, intelligent people will look for something beyond this temporary. It is temporary. It is miserable. The nature of the material world is miserable. There's degree, there's miserable, less miserable, and least miserable. But in more or less, it's miserable. We get, as I already explained, we get a little sweet taste in the midst of all the sand, all the miseries. We get a little something that we mentally, it's all in our mind. Just imagine. Sit quietly now, peacefully. There is the most beautiful waterfall. There's a pond at the bottom of it. Very still, very beautiful pond with swans. And there are many beautiful flowers and other birds singing sweet songs, and the aroma. There are lotus flowers, and there's the spray of the waterfall, and it's really something nice. But if there's nobody there in the forest to enjoy it, is there any innate enjoyment in that? No. It's all in the mind. What if you don't like waterfalls? What if you hate swans? What if you got a cold and you can't smell nice flowers? You know, one man's pleasure is another man's poison. It's all relative. It's all mental concoction. Sarva Brahm. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that this idea that A Balo, A Manda, this is good, this is bad, A Sam, A sub Brahm. It's all an illusion. There's nothing good or bad about the material world. It's all temporary and therefore miserable. Your constitutional position as a soul is Satchit Ananda. You're eternal. The material world is temporary. You're full of knowledge. The material world is ignorance. We don't know from moment to moment medicine is. They cannot tell you how food is changed into energy. Digested and changed into energy. They're working on it. In the future, they're going to tell you. By the time you're, you know, so when your stomach is so spoiled that you can, you know, only eat barley water. And even then, what's the value of knowing? So, intelligent people will endeavor for something superior. And that's spiritual life. By engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, those who are devotees, they free themselves from attachment to the material world. And they attain to that state which is free from all miseries. Now, just as you drew a graph and extrapolated for sense gratification, just increasing the volume of sense gratification is not going to bring you more pleasure. You're getting, you know, just like, for example, supposing we have a Sunday feast. And, you know, do they ever serve gulab jamuns here? Huh? Are they good gulab jamuns? Okay. Now, you know, eat one, and, you know, wow, that was good. You know, and you have two, and wow, they're really good at this. That was a great gulab. That second one was good. But, you know, like after your fifth gulab jamun, you know, you start to get satiated. And if you have 20 more, it's not going to give you more pleasure, is it? Now, I was once in a competition. I didn't want to be in the competition. In Australia, it was at the Prabhupada Reunion Festival. And, you know, there were all these young guys, you know. And they were all, you know, they're kind of new, but they were fired up. And I was like the senior person there. And, you know, I was too old to engage in, you know, gulab jamun eating contests. You know, that's for kids, you know. But I thought just to encourage them, I like to have a good time, you know. Encourage them, have fun, enjoy. You're all kids, you know. So I sat down in the circle. And 35 gulab jamuns later, I was the winner. I beat all these young guys. I couldn't believe it. Half my age, man. They just don't make gulab jamun eaters anymore the way they used to. You know who's one of the best gulab jamun eaters in the world? Believe it or else, is Indra Dyumnaswamy. You don't believe it, do you? Him and Bhakti Bringa Govinda and a Yoda, yeah, Bhakti Bringa Govinda Swami. They're very good. But I think there are better ones in America. Vaisheshika once, I think he ate about 80 gulab jamuns. Paul Newman could probably eat more of it. The point was that after about the third gulab jamun, I was sick, you know. By 35, I walked, they had to carry me away. I didn't vomit, but... if you get more, just more sense gratification, your life's not going to be happy. It really isn't. You've got to change the quality of your life. You've got to take to spiritual life. That's the element missing in your lives, why you're not satisfied. with sense gratification. You can get a big job and get, you know, a big house and three boats and a Mercedes car, the latest 600 or, you know, two engines in the car instead of one, you know. You know, maybe you get a yacht, buy Jackie Onassis's yacht or something. I don't know. You know, you can do so many arrangements. But you're not going to get satisfaction because you're a spiritual being. You're a soul. As Teilhard de Chardin said, the Catholic philosopher, for any Catholics in the audience, we're not material beings having a spiritual experience, but we're actually spiritual beings looking or having a material experience. We are spiritual beings. We are the soul. And by cultivating devotional service, we'll stop this repetition of birth and death. And devotional service is very easy. You just have to come here to the temple or in your own home or in coordination with the devotees. Do something. You have to do something. Engage your senses. Don't be lazy. The worst thing you can do is to be inactive or lazy. Devotees are inspired to serve Krishna, and they're prepared to do whatever is needful, but they're not lazy. We have so much work to do to spread Krishna consciousness. We're not trying to impose. We want to share. People can choose if they like, but we want to make them aware of, we want to expose them to this wonderful philosophy of how they can become better Christians, better Hindus, better Muslims, or whatever. Become perfect persons and get free from the cycle of birth and death. Go to that place where there is no more suffering. That's the only place, is in Krishna Loka. So I'll stop there. Are there any questions? What a silence. Somebody got a pin? All right. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.